Hi, and welcome to Testcast, a fortnightly podcast about all things related to software testing. I'm Bruce McLeod, and along with my co-host Trish Koo, we discuss testing techniques, tools, and living the life of a software tester. This is show number 7, the second part of our interview with James Bark. In this episode, we discuss the effectiveness of pairwise testing. The bandwidth for the show is sponsored by Full Viewprint and Multimedia Design. They pay our web hosting bills. You can find more about their work and services at www.ful-vue.com. If you like the show, you can help us out by jumping onto iTunes and giving us a good rating. Thanks for listening.
I was looking at generating some test data and some test cases, and I was looking at sort of three things. The first one I looked at was a little tool called AllPairs. I think you might know the author.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to see that the author himself had actually almost flipped on his opinion of whether AllPairs testing was a good thing.
No, not at all. I think AllPairs is really cool.
So I'll come back to you on that because obviously you wrote it and I want to just delve into that a little bit. But then I also looked at Hexawise, and then I also looked at there's an open source API called Test API. I think it's on CodePlex from Microsoft. And it literally is a C# library that you can call to do the test generation. And I think it's definitely worth a look if someone's in the
.NET space. Really? I haven't heard of that. I'd like to know more about that.
Yeah, it's going to get some. Just quickly have a look. I think it's testapi.coplex.com.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right, I'm gonna find out about that.
Yep, that's it. Testapi.coplex.com, and okay. The API covers input injection, command line parsing, visual verification, combinatorial variation generation, managed code fault injection, test string generation, memory leak detection, object comparison API, and best of all, it's open source and free.
Why didn't you tell me about this before?
I'm going to have to go find out about that.
So, definitely worth a look.
It's testapi.codeplex.com. I've just typed this into our chat session so you can make sure I got it right.
Yep, that's it.
Testapi.co. Okay. All right, I got it.
Yeah, so definitely worth a look. So, I was looking at code generation. So, it was interesting. So, when you originally wrote AllPairs, can you want to do a background about that? And also, there was a paper that you wrote, I think with Kemp Kana, I think about...
Schrader, actually.
Sorry about revisiting that a few years later.
What happened is Kemp Kana liked to talk about AllPairs because it's a way to do combinatorial testing with less effort. And he used to teach how to do this by hand. And it was outrageous to do this by hand. So he had challenged some of his students to come up with a program, and I decided to compete with his students. And I came up with my own algorithm, which is basically a brute force algorithm. I tried some various optimizations, but what I found is that the brute force algorithm is so fast that it doesn't matter. So I never had any strong incentive to do any better than the brute force. Now, it doesn't do fancy things. It just does straight-ahead all pairs. And for people who don't know what all pairs is, what all pairs is instead of having if you have a set of variables and each variable has n different values, and you don't want to try all combinations because all combinations would be each variable times every other variable. It'd be a huge set. Then a solution to that is to maybe try all pairs. What all pairs is instead of constructing a set that has all combinations, you construct a set that has every pairing of every value of every variable with every value of every other variable. And you pack that into as small a space as you can. And so this doesn't necessarily cover all triples or all quadruples. It doesn't cover all combinations, but it covers all pairings. And because a lot of bugs happen just because one particular value doesn't play well with another particular value of another variable, all pairs can help you find some good bugs. And so I wrote the tool, and I published the tool. It's available under the free software license, so anybody can download it. And then, of course, I tried to find reasons to use the tool. And what I found is I don't run across very many situations where I can use all pairs. I mean, I really want to use all pairs because it's cool. But it turns out that any time that I want to use all pairs, there's another technique that's better than all pairs that it almost always is better than all pairs, which I'll mention in a minute. So a few years after I created all pairs, I got contacted by Pat Schrader, who was using all pairs with his students at the Wisconsin School of Engineering, I guess. It was the Milwaukee School of Engineering. And he was a professor there. And he said he was noticing a strange thing, which is his students would find more bugs with random testing than with all pairs. And I didn't understand that. Because I thought random testing would be a lot less efficient. Well, so what I did is I created a version of all pairs which didn't try to actually try to pack the smallest number of pairings the greatest number of pairings into the smallest space. Instead, it just randomly chose tests, and when it had reached all pairs status, it would stop. And what I discovered by doing that is random testing pretty rapidly covers all pairs.
Wow.
And I didn't understand why that was the case until I analyzed it mathematically, and I discovered that there's a simple reason why that random testing gets you to all pairs quite quickly, and that's because of something called the cumulative exponential distribution. In other words, it's a fancy way of saying that if you just spin a wheel that has 100 items on it, and you just spin a wheel and randomly choose one of those 100 items, at first, every single item that you get is going to be untried. It'll be non-duplicated, right? Maybe the first time you spin it, you get a 57, and the next time you get a 98, and the next time you get a 42. And after a while, you'll start getting duplicates. But the thing is that if you graph the number, the cumulative number that you have tried, you'll find that that graph is steep at first, and then it levels out. And it turns out that it levels out, and it could take a long time to get those last few, of course. But you basically get 90% of all of them pretty fast. It's the last 10% to take you a while. And what that means is random testing, which randomly covers pairings, will automatically get you to most of all pairs almost as fast as an all pairs algorithm that's trying to get all pairs really fast will get you there. It's the last 10% that's going to take a long time. And so I've run a bunch of simulations of this, and I have come up with a formula that is a simple heuristic. Here's a simple heuristic. If you have, let's say, any number of variables, doesn't matter, could be 100,000 variables. And all you need to do is find the two variables that have the most values. Let's say that they're all binary variables, so they're all the same number of values. They're all yes, no's. Well, then you just pick any two of them. Take the two that have the most. Multiply those together. So if you have two and two, two yes and no and yes and no, that's two times two. Multiply them together, that's four. Multiply that times two, that's eight. All you need is eight random test cases. For 100,000 binary variables, you need eight random test cases, and you are covering about 90% of all the pairs. And that's what the mathematics dictates.
Really?
Yes, it's true. It's very counterintuitive.
So, where does the second two come from? So, you said you've got, you know, so I've got 100 permutations and they're all yes, no. You said pick two, so that's two and two, and then you said add two again. So how did you work out the two again?
What I'm doing is I am I'm basically taking you n sigmas into the cumulative exponential distribution. So one sigma into the cumulative exponential distribution, or one x, takes you to about 64%.
Okay. So
in other words, if you have a wheel and it has 100 items on it, and you spin that wheel 100 times, you will cover about 64 items on that wheel because you'll have a bunch of duplicates. If you spin it 200 times, you're going to get up to about 85% or something like that. If you spin it 300 times, you'll be up to 95% or so. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm going to 2x and I get to 85%, 3x and I'm at 95%. And so the x's, I'm getting the x's just by taking two of the variables and multiplying them together. Basically, I'm calculating what is the worst case for any particular case of pairings, which is the two largest variables multiplied by each other. And then everything else is going to be covered more easily than that. And then if I have that number times x, or three, or whatever you want, for how many sigmas you want to go up.
Okay, so let's run through this again. So if instead of being 2 and 2, it was 10 and 10, and you wanted pairs, it would be 10, 10, 2. Then if you wanted triples, it would be 10, 10, 3.
Well, not... I guess you're right. I guess you would have to say, not 10, 10, 3 if you want triples. It would be 10 times 10 times 10.
That's what I wanted to check, yeah.
Yeah. So if you want all pairs, but you want a higher percentage coverage of all the pairs, you want to get to 95% of all the pairs, then you'd say 10 times 10 is 100 multiplied by 300. Do 300 random test cases. Now, I want you to – here's how to visualize this in your head so that you know why it works. The reason why I said 100,000 binary variables is I want you to visualize – a 640 by 480 graphic that is a random black or white graphic. So it's just a salt and pepper graphic, just white noise, right?
Yep,
some of the pixels are black, some of the pixels are white. Now, I want you to pick any two pixels, like say the top left corner and the bottom right corner of that. Now, the top right corner is going to be either black or white. The bottom right corner is going to be either black or white. The top left and bottom right, it'll either be a black or a white. Now, if you randomize that graphic 8 times, just randomize every bit in that graphic, then if you just look at the corners, sometimes the corner is going to be white, sometimes the other corner is going to be white, sometimes it's black, sometimes it's white, sometimes it's black, sometimes it's white. So if you just look at those two corners, you're probably going to cover in 8 random cases – a case where they're both white, a case where they're both black, a case where one is white and one is black, a case where one is black and one is white. But what you have to realize is simultaneously that is happening with every other pixel. So you're simultaneously covering all pairs of all the other pixels with all the other ones. It's not a linear thing. It's simultaneous. That's why in 8 cases – you're going to cover so many pairs.
Yeah, exactly.
Because with random testing, you're each test case, you're covering hundreds of thousands of pairings.
Mm.
Yeah. So the key point being that you're randomizing all those 100 fields in the same way. You're not just randomizing two fields and ignoring the rest.
Right, you're right. It's a random test case. All the variables have to be randomly chosen. No, so here's what I do. I use all pairs when I have a small number of variables and when tests are expensive. And then I want the smallest number of test cases. But what I frequently find in cases where I'm doing combinatorial testing is I can automate. Yes. And I can just pour in random test cases. And so I find that, you know, I can just automate and I can cover lots and lots and lots and lots of pairs that way. So I usually don't worry about all pairs in those cases.
Yeah, and so this is exactly where my brain's going in the work that I'm currently doing, where it just so happens I'm working in a C-sharp stack, so this C-sharp test API would almost work in perfectly, in that I can build the combinatorial all pairs code on top of my already existing stack and just drive it through the UI.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that sounds cool. Now, where people think that I'm against all pairs is when I attack the breathless idolizing that people do of all pairs. And I've talked to Justin Hunter about this because he falls into this whenever I'm not in the room. He'll say, oh, all pairs is the better way to do it because research shows – that most combinatorial bugs are single variable, you know, just two variable bugs. And that research that he's referring to is research that was done at AT&T on one kind of system. And there's no reason to believe that that research is generalizable to anything else. Plus, I don't even think the research was true for what they did do that for. Because I don't believe – I don't understand how they can say, oh, look, we found all the bugs and then we carefully went through and found out and counted how many variables were involved in all of the bugs. I don't think they found all of the bugs. I think the danger with research like that is you only find the bugs you find because you were only looking in the way you were looking. And if there were happen to be an important bug with 10 variables associated with it, well, you didn't find it. So, of course, you're going to say, oh, it wasn't there because I didn't find it. And how do you know that 10-variable problem isn't a very important problem? It's very easy to say, well, if a problem only happens when 10 variables line up, then obviously it's a rare problem. But what if the variables that are lining up are all the defaults? Well, that's not rare at all. So I think that it is a bit reckless to say all pairs is the best. I think what you should say is all pairs is good for certain things. It's for when you want to explore the risk associated with specific combinations of things causing trouble, and when it's expensive to do those combinatorial tests and you want to minimize that expense, then sure. I mean, I have no problem with all pairs. So in my paper, which is pairwise testing, a best practice that isn't, we tried to present at the end of the paper, this is a responsible way to think about all pairs. And we lay out what the responsible way is to do that, and that's all that I'm trying to. That's all that I'm trying to get to, and so I'm not against all pairs. I'm against best practices. I'm against not understanding the limitations of any practice that you're using. We should always understand those limitations and not get carried away.
I think a lot of the limitations around not doing that sort of testing are falling away. Like, I know personally, if I was given the choice of spending thousands of dollars on a commercial tool versus spending that money in hardware so I could then scale out, you know, running combination after combination after combination through using something like All Pairs or through an open source automation API, that's definitely where I think I could get better bang for buck.
Uh-huh.
But I suppose what is important, what am I trying to think of? But that implies that I actually have the skills to be able to write and use those tools. So
not necessarily. It may imply that you want to develop those skills.
So,
one thing that I think is a really good idea, Bruce, and I feel this behind your words, is I think it's a good idea when you discover these tools to play with them and try to use them, see how they might work.
Yeah.
That's what I love about what Pat Schrader did, because when he told me that you know, random testing's better than all pairs, I said, what? That's crazy. And then I did the experiments, and I saw what he was talking about. And I love the fact that he raised a question about this, but he raised the question because he played with it. He had his students play with it. He tried this stuff out. And I get really excited about trying new test tools out. And I have no problem with testers that want to do that. I just want testers to be reasonably skeptical when they do that.
And challenge your own assumptions.
And I think you're the kind of guy who does that, Bruce. I feel that in you. I don't feel like you're a fanboy of Test API. I think you found something pretty cool and you want to work with it and learn about it. And then you'll have a nice basis. And this goes back to what I was talking about with Aaron Hodder. My advice to people who don't have a lot of experience is, you know, be skeptical. Let yourself be sensitized by the gray heads who are saying, hey, be careful, that's dangerous. But then, you know, go out and try it. Maybe don't try it, you know, don't bet the farm on it. But but go out and try it and see how it works for you. And you know what? You may be able to find a way to make it work that other people have failed to find. And people have made a lot of money on that. Like, look at the guy who did Facebook. I hear he came out pretty well.
well, and he wasn't the first tester, to try that, it?
Was
you got to learn, and you got to test out not just the software that you're testing, test out the tools you're using, test out the processes that you're using, test out the theories that people are presenting to you about whatever is a best practice or whatever works well for them. You don't know it. How do you know it? You're a tester. You should be verifying this.
Right. And I, you know what, I have to go, I'm running out of time, but that's what I like about you two. Both you two, Trish, that's what I like about you. I have a feeling that you're a friendly person, Trish. I've had some conversations with you, and I don't think you're the kind of person who just goes along because other people want you to do that. It seems to me that you're both people who insist on learning things for yourself. And you listen, and you try to learn from others too. Of course we do, but that doesn't mean that we just repeat anything that we're told by some guru. And then that's why I really enjoyed having conversations with you. And you know, Bruce, the first time I met you, I hammered you on some things, and I was trying to push you, and I wanted to see what would happen if I pushed you. And I was really pleased with your responses.
I'm glad.
So good on you.
Yeah.
And thank you for having me for this podcast. I hope it's of some value to someone.
More than welcome. I suppose that's one of the key things what we're trying to do. And the whole point of this is to give something back and help people sort of go on the journey that we've gone on.
Yeah, all right.
So,
yeah.
Thanks, James. Appreciate it. And I'd love to do this again at some point in the future.
Yeah. Thank you very much,
anytime,
James.
Anytime.
All right, James. Pleasure. Thanks. See ya.